Okay, welcome and good evening. Welcome to the Peace Alliance September 2019 Monthly Action Call. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the Peace Alliance National Field Coordinator, and I appreciate you all being with us tonight. As usual, we have a pretty action-packed call, and I'm going to go over the agenda, and then I'm going to introduce our guest speaker for the month. So after our guest speaker, Saul Arbeth, speaks, we're going to have a chance for some question and answer and discussion. And then we're going to hear an update on the Department of Peacebuilding Committee from Kendra Mann. And then we're going to hear from Anne Kreeter, who's going to talk about the UN Infrastructures for Peace Resolution and also the 20th anniversary of the UN High-Level Forum on the Culture of Peace. And then we're going to go over the monthly action. And everyone who was registered for the call as of 45 minutes ago should have received in your inbox an email from me with the monthly action linked within that email. So I would encourage folks sometime in the next half hour to access that email and click on that link so that you can follow along on the action sheet when we review the action in the second half of the call. After we review those actions and do some training, then we're going to hear shares from the field. That's anybody on the call who wants to share what's going on in your peace-building world, whether it's in your neighborhood, in your congressional district, in your schools, et cetera. We want to know what's happening with you, any events that we can help you promote, any questions that you have still remaining for folks who are on the call. And then we will close. So that's the plan for tonight. And now I'd like to introduce our very special guest, Saul Arbeth. And Saul is on the front lines of peace building worldwide, as well as restorative justice and climate change mitigation. He is a co-founder of the Global Alliance for Ministries and Infrastructures of Peace, and that's GAMIP, which really is an organization that kind of grew up in some ways simultaneous with the Peace Alliance. And I think Saul will touch on that a little bit. Once we get into his talk, he chaired that organization from 2005 to 2011. And during that same period, Saul was the national co-chair of the Canadian Peace Initiative, CPI, and he's currently the director of CPI. He's a co-founder of Restorative Justice in Victoria and is active in climate change mitigation at the local, national, and global levels in the area of protection and renewal of forests. He has a handful of higher education degrees, including in cultural anthropology and in learning styles and programmed learning, and he has taught at the university level throughout Canada. We are really thrilled and honored to have him with us. Saul, thank you for joining us, and I really look forward to hearing what you have to share.
Well, thank you very much for that very kind and warm introduction. It's so good to see people here that I know. Some I've met recently with Mike, of course, I've work with, as I said earlier, since 2005. It's so good to see you, Mike. And I really feel very honored to be on this call because, what we need a lot more multilateralism in the world. It's been disappearing, and nation states are withdrawing into themselves, and America first, and so forth. And when I was a child, we had tremendous admiration for the United States. We thought of the United States as really the place which expressed democracy and freedom. And but I have to confess one thing. The most important thing for me as a child was whenever people came from the United States and they came back to Canada. We were living in Montreal at the time. The most important thing was whether or not they brought with them Tootsie Rolls and Fleer's Double Bubble Gum, because we couldn't get it for some reason in Canada at the time, and these were prized items. So even my stomach remembers those early days very, very well. So I wanted to say that, of course, this is a critical time and the greatest need that we've ever had. We've always had the need for peace builders worldwide. And I'm very, very happy to have this kind of cross-border collaboration that we've had with the Peace Alliance since its foundation. And I should also say that Denis Kucinich, who we regard as the modern spirit behind departments of peace, the movement for those, was central in our formation as well. And it was his work and his pursuit of the Department of Peace idea that really started us off and got us moving on it. Now, what I would like to talk about today, of course, is an architecture for peace at the national level. Now, this has generally come to be known as infrastructures for peace. And for a lot of people have trouble with that conceptually. But if we could bring up the first of the slides, Dan, we can try and define what we're talking about here. And it's a simple definition. So I'll wait for you to do that.
Okay. I'm working on that.
There it is.
Okay, great.
There it is. So infrastructures for peace, or I4P, a network of independent systems, resources, values, and skills held by government, civil society, and community institutions that promote dialogue and consultation, prevent conflict, and enable peaceful mediation when violence occurs in society. So what we are looking at, the critical aspects of this idea is, first of all, of course, it's at all levels in a society, at the national, regional, and local level. And that at the regional and local level, they are semi-autonomous in that we know that often governments in conflict situations can be distrusted. So what is very important, especially at the local level, is you convene people who are highly respected and work in a culturally appropriate way in that setting. And it may have members from, it may have politicians that are party to it, but essentially it is, the best model we really have for this is restorative justice. Restorative justice, that model really describes ideally what happens at the local or regional level. But it's critical that there is a national input, that there's national support and funding for these organizations. But they stand alone, they have a significant autonomy, and the experience has been that when there is a solution at that level, that it's generally respected by the national government as well. So the important thing here is that it's not state-imposed at those levels. So at the national level, of course, we have our own movement for departments of peace, but there are now, and this is why our organization, the Global Alliance, has added, it used to be just for ministries and departments of peace, but we have added to that, or changed it, to talk about infrastructures for peace, because that much broadens what we're doing. Many countries have, well, not many, but several countries have national infrastructures for peace, but they do not have a minister defined as such, or a department in that way. Some outstanding examples are dealing with pre- and post-election violence in Africa, Ghana, and also Kenya have these comprehensive programs that do really promote very much the idea, the local peace committees. So if we want to see how this might be, we can see, for example, in the United States, at the national level, you have both the Department of Peace bill, and you have the U.S. Institute for Peace, which, of course, has no power. It has the powers of suasion. It does research. It provides important inputs. One hopes that they're more listened to than they really have been. We have at that now that level, but we don't have anything consolidated at that level. There's no union, as you know better than I do, that there's no U.S. Secretary of Peace, which is what we saw and which has been actually considered, as Mike Apkin did the research on this, since the very formation of this country, when it was called for to offset the influence of the Department of War, the War Department. That was very, very interesting and very well before its time. And we're still struggling with this idea now. So that's the national level. At the regional level, we have, for example, state of California, the Democratic Party in the state of California, as you well know, because of the work that Kendra and others have done within your group, have a resolution calling for a Department of Peace at the state level. As far as I know, there are no such departments as yet. Maybe someone can correct me later. Not in Canada and not in the United States. And then at the local level, I'd like to mention, for example, the Ashland, Oregon Peace Commission, which is an audacious group that has, in fact, is convening next week a global conference on the culture of peace. And I will actually be presenting there in the company of Ambassador Chowdhury. So that little group has succeeded in getting Ambassador Chowdhury to come and present and to meet with the children there who maintain a universal peace flame. And this, I think, is a very good example of what can happen at the local level. So we have seen that this is a important kind of movement, because what it does is, what typically happens is that there is a conflict, there is an issue, it may or may not get resolved, but something happens, and then these structures tend to dissipate. They tend not to be active any longer. Whereas the military infrastructure, that is a permanent infrastructure, constantly growing infrastructure, an infrastructure that is outstandingly, if I might say, resource up to the point of more than 50 cents of the dollar of discretionary spending in the U.S. budget is devoted to the military. So I feel that we have a long way to go in this, but it's important that we see it. So if we looked at a parallel structure, let us say, and I'm going to use some examples from Canada and some from the United States, and mostly from the United States, if we look at induction and training for existing military and potential peace worker careers. So the military career is very well set out. You start out with something at the high school level, like junior ROTC. There's the Future Soldiers Program. There are the military academies, which we do not exist in Canada, and I don't know where else they do exist in the world. In Canada, we have the peace cadets. The military cadets. All three services in Canada have this induction process beginning at the age 14. There's nothing like that for peace workers. So what we need is something like what, if I use the Canadian example, we need peace cadets. The opportunity to do peace building, sustainable work while you're still in high school. And then at the next level, the university level, there's of course the reserve officer training program in both countries. And there's the degree that you can get in peace and conflict studies. But what we would like to see at the next level is that there's a certification of, for example, unarmed civilian peace workers, that there is a certification of people working in this field that are parallel really to military commissions. And finally, that there is this ability to rise through the ranks in the military. No such thing exists in the peace-building field, not formally anyway. I'm not saying we all want a rank system, but I'm saying we need some kind of a system which recognizes what people are doing at home and in the field. And we need promotion opportunities and infrastructures for peace, which is why I spoke about before that there are we need to provide through an infrastructure for peace opportunities at all levels for people to further participate. So essentially, if we could bring up the next slide, please. I want to speak briefly about Canada's ambassador, new ambassador for women, peace, and security, which, by the way, as she has worked for 20 years, 16 or 20 years, with Ambassador Chowdhury, who gave her the highest acknowledgement and praise, and also Canada for creating this position. So this will not be a feel-good position. This will be a person, her name is Jacqueline O'Neill, some of you might know her name. She is a very determined peace worker and has worked in this field of women, peace, and security for that whole period. So I put proposed up here because this is what has become reality only in June of this year. And our people have been involved along with many others, especially women's organizations in Canada, the National Action Committee on Women, Peace, and Security, for example. She has been holding meetings to discuss her mandate, and this is some part of that mandate, but we're of course hoping that that mandate becomes more elaborated, more in keeping with what we see as the broader role of a Department of Peace. And we see this as a proving stage. It's very difficult to all at once get a new department or a secretary in a government. But this is a stage where we can prove the value of this work and a need to expand what is happening. So this is an extremely exciting development for us. The Canadian Peace Initiative has been at the heart of this work, and also certain members of Parliament that have worked with us since 2006 to bring this together. And we hope that other countries will emulate this, because we feel that this is a very important initiative. We know about the centrality that women should have in all aspects of peace building. Women and children are the most impacted by war. And when I say all aspects, I mean at the negotiating table. We know that agreements at which women are at the table tend to be more enduring than those which are exclusively male. So I think that's basically what I wanted to convey today. I'm very anxious and looking forward to people asking questions about this work. And I know that Anne, is this the point, Dan? Over to you, Dan.
Okay, great. Thank you, Saul. What a pleasure. Very inspiring. Folks that would like to ask a question or add their voice to the conversation, and use the icon if they have the Zoom downloaded, the application on your computer or phone, you can just raise your hand. If you're on your phone, you can press *9 and that will raise your hand. If you're having a hard time seeing the app icon on your computer, you can just, if your camera's on, you can just raise your physical hand and I'll see Kendra's raising her hand. Okay, great. Kendra, you are unmuted.
I just wondered that perhaps there might be some people on the call that don't know about Ambassador Chowdhury, and I wondered if you would tell us more about him, Saul.
You know, I would like to ask Anne to do this, if she's there. I think she is. Anne, because Anne works very, very closely with Ambassador Chowdhury, and I would like her to comment if she would be willing.
Hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Anne. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Ambassador Chowdhury is the former ambassador from Bangladesh, who had been at one time the president of the General Assembly, because they rotate. And he was the person that after a 9-month process, was able to get the Declaration and Program of Action on the Culture of Peace passed by the General Assembly. And it was a very challenging process because you know, the culture of peace makes it harder to wage war. So it was, you know, a long process, and that's why we're very excited now that we're going to be celebrating the 20th anniversary of the passage of the resolution next, this Friday. So that's what Ambassador Chowdhury's passion is, the culture of peace. And I don't know how he does all the work that he's doing, but he's retired now, but he lives near the UN. So he basically devotes his life to promoting this wonderful resolution.
Great. Thank you, Anne. We're going to hear more from Anne a little bit later, as I mentioned. Thanks for that. Anybody else have a question? And you can. I see a couple of hands raised. There they are. I see Georgina Galanis. Go ahead, Georgina.
Yes, I'm just very enthused to be on this call. And I just wanted to add to my colleague Anne Kreeder's comments about Ambassador Chowdhury and his work with the United Nations and in founding the Global Movement for the Culture of Peace, which also brings together over 25 entities locally and globally to work on peace measures and peace building. And he also is quite versed and has spent a lot of time working on the issues of 1325, women, peace and security, and as well, upholding 2250, which is youth peace and security. So we are part of the Global Movement for the Culture of Peace, and we're really happy to be on this call. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Georgina. This might be a good time to remind folks that this call is being recorded. So if you missed some of those details and numbers, you can download it as a podcast from our website under the Peace On menu item on the peacealliance.org. website. I have a couple of other hands, and I see a couple of hands physically, but let me get this other one that I saw previously, and it's from a phone caller, area code 404. So if you're in the 404 area code, I'm unmuting you. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I was just basically wanted to just thank you guys for just basically doing what you normally would do in promoting peace. There has been several individual situations that occurred with me personally about peace, and I think I need more of a clearer understanding rather than just a national and local understanding about the peace movement itself. I'm fairly new to the movement, and I just need a little bit more clarification, not really on a national level versus a regional level, but more on a local level and an individual level about the greater understanding of the movement.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'll go ahead, Saul, whatever comes to mind. I have some thoughts, but you go first.
Thank you very much for that question and for a request for elaboration. If you are familiar with restorative justice process, this gives us some idea of how such an organization would such a local peace committee would be established. First of all, it would have to have the participation of all engaged parties in a particular conflict. And I should mention before this, though, that it's extremely critical, if you understand how these things should work, that you have, it's preventative, because you try to apprehend something before it becomes a conflict, something that's incipient in the community, for example, where there's a rising risk of direct conflict, even violence, then there is this opportunity for it to be, with this committee already in place, for this to be seen and sensed. I call it a sensor for the early detection of what might erupt into violence and the escalation of that. And so, and the other part of it is that local peace committees, people on the ground who know their communities, who know their place, who know who the respected people are, and act in a culturally appropriate manner, have this great opportunity to be able to resolve conflict in their own community, which in fact strengthens that community, empowers that community. And so the idea is they would meet and with all the parties that are involved in that conflict together to come to an agreement by consensus of what would be a good outcome and how will they move forward to avoid the escalation of that conflict and to implement measures that will try to assure that this does not continue. So that would be that's the basic idea of it. And in many communities, these are very much working, very much in practice. Here in my own city in Victoria, Canada, we're working primarily with the police in this case, but I'm extending this with the local peace committee idea. And that is, I think, an elaboration. I hope that helps.
Okay. Thank you so very much. It did.
Great. Thanks again for your question. Yeah, so, Mike. Excuse me.
One last thing. We are going to make available a set of references of documents that people can read around this work that Ann Kreeter has created for us. And I think she'll make it available online on your website shortly. I think we have agreement to do that. So that will be very helpful as well.
Terrific. Great. Okay, Mike, I see you there. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. And I wanted to respond to that question also from area code 404. I don't know what you're doing. But, and I think you talked about a multi-level approach to peace and how it at all levels, not just national, it's all mentioned local circles and local communities. It goes even below that. It goes into each one of us, our own personal relationships. It goes into our own hearts and how we see ourselves in relation to the community around us, our families. And that's really where peace starts. And so a large part of peace building is building that inner peace and that inner awareness of our interconnectedness and our interdependence. And that's really where it starts. Hmm. I had another comment also, but that didn't come later after this conversation, which is really important.
I think you can go ahead, Mike.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say, I wanted to ask Saul if he would talk. You've talked about the Global Alliance, GAMIP, we call it for short, GAMIP. Talk about some of the summits and what they are and any outcomes that have come from them. We've had several so far, and there's a couple more planned. Global summits and what they're about. I think that would be interesting for people to hear.
So I see that Dot Maver is also on the call. In 2005, Dot, Mike, myself, Penny, Joy, my wife, and Diane Basterfield of the United Kingdom came together in London to form GAMIP. And we started with a relatively small but very committed group of people. We immediately started to call them summits for ministries and departments of peace. We were thinking very large at the time. Only a few months later, in Canada, Canada hosted the second summit. And then we went to the World Peace Forum, and at that World Peace Forum in Vancouver in the same year, and all of us went over to that from my own home city. And at that, we were able to attract both Dennis Kucinich and Marianne Williamson, who was at that time, I believe, the president of the Peace Alliance, to come to Vancouver and to further and promote not just our initiative, but those worldwide in GAMIP. And from that point on, we have held 6 summits on 5 continents altogether, which is quite a remarkable achievement, I think. And next year, we're going to hold the 20th anniversary summit in the year 2020 in London, in the UK. And we are very much looking forward to it. I think some peace-building work would be very much welcome in London at that time. And so we're moving ahead with that. But just to give you some other highlights, over time, there have been spin-off organizations. There's been the Africa Alliance for Peace that's formed, that's met several times. There has been the Southeast Asia group as well. We have now, there's something over 50 countries that have participated and are members of the parent organization. So over time, I can give you some specific examples. I don't want to take too much time on this, but I've recently just published, actually, for purposes of funding of the next conference, a one-page synopsis of GAMIC, which I can share through Dan and through the Peace Alliance, because I think that would be quite useful for people to have. But I do want to say that our group in Costa Rica played a major role in the formation of the expansion of the Ministry of Justice to the Ministry of Justice and Peace. And that was a huge moment for us in 2009. In Nepal, again, our people there
global
had a major impact on the formation of the Ministry of Peace and Reconciliation in Nepal. And so these have been a couple examples that our work on the ground has borne fruit. And of course, we want to see a greater expansion of this idea. And as I said before, it doesn't have to be a minister. It doesn't have to be but there is a national initiative of the kind that I spoke of in Africa before. Also, the small Islamic Republic of Kyrgyzstan in Central Asia. And virtually all of these has a very comprehensive infrastructure for peace at all levels. So that's why we did expand our idea. And so that is where we stand today. Dot may want, or Mike may want to amplify what I've just said in terms of some highlights that that GAMIC has achieved over that time. And while Dot is thinking about it, I've got to mention one thing that's really important to me and directly relevant to what we're doing here tonight, because in 2013, we held the summit in Geneva. It was a remarkable summit, actually. And in that summit, we convened what the UN Development Program, which is really at the heart of this movement for infrastructures for peace, especially in Africa, told us that was the first global conference on infrastructures for peace. So we have been at the forefront in this field, and we intend to continue to do so.
Wonderful. I see Dot's hands up, and I also see Nancy Merritt's hands up. So we'll go to Dot and then Nancy, and then I think that's probably about all for this section. So go ahead, Dot.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's good to see everybody and hear everybody. Then Saul, thank you for the overview. You know, it seems after all these years and for many decades before, so many of us planting so many seeds and building on the pavers that have been laid by those who came before us. It's now being recognized, as Saul said, in over 50 countries and with momentum growing, that it is time to institutionalize peace and not to do so in the same old way that we've done business as usual, but to actually do it as Anne will speak to, I'm sure, and as we're all very well aware, where we become the demonstration model for what that is. It begins with each one of us, and as we institutionalize peace within ourselves, speak that, think that, etc., it reaches all the way to the highest levels. One of the highlights, Saul, for me was in Costa Rica when then President Oscar Arias welcomed over 200 GAMIP delegates at that big theater in San Jose. And that's when they made the formal announcement. In a way, that put GAMIP on the map. We're not a huge organization, but we have had a significant impact. And we actually grew in a way in spot out of and inspired by the Peace Alliance and the work that was happening in Canada and London at the time. So as we continue now, groups working with groups, it seems there's a next step to take for all of us. And hopefully many of us who are on this call tonight will look to June 2020 to be at that London summit and once again put out there this institutionalizing peace in very practical ways that, and thank you 404, I wish I knew your name, you know, we're at, yes, it begins with each one of us. And what a joy after all these years to come together on another turn of the spiral.
I just wanted, am I muted now or?
No, you're live.
Thank you. So I just wanted to add that there's been a recent spark in the development of departments of peace, actually, both in Ethiopia, where in 2018, they created a ministry of peace. And in fact, that person has significant responsibilities. The other one is, and we're still trying to get more information on this, but there is a State Department of Peace within Afghanistan. And its primary work, of course, is on the negotiation with the Taliban. But that is a very recent development in the within the last year. So these are two developments that we think are extremely encouraging. And also the last one I'd mentioned was South Sudan. Now, South Sudan did create a minister of peace with significant responsibilities for the implementation of the agreement that existed at the time between Sudan and South Sudan at the end of what appeared to be at that moment, the end of the conflict. But as you know, this conflict has been continued, has been aggravated. They have dropped that position. And we're very disappointed about that. And the civil war, as you know, it's kind of a war between now two nations, has continued unabated. And that's a very unfortunate set of circumstances. What I failed to mention, too, is the role of unarmed civilian peace workers like Nonviolent Peace Force and others, that is extremely critical in implementation of peace work everywhere, from accompaniment of people who have been displaced returning home to actually beginning the first part of a process that eventually leads to a diplomatic solution. And they're very active in South Sudan, I must say. And they have trained, in especially the Nonviolent Peace Force has trained women peace builders in that framework, which is a very important development.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to go over to Nancy, and I'm going to acknowledge that I'm taking some liberties with the timing of our agenda. So we're going to get a little bit organic in the second half. This is so rich, I have not wanted to change a thing, but we'll make it all work. Nancy Merritt, who's the council lead on our leadership council for the Department of Peacebuilding Committee and was instrumental in organizing this call and inviting Saul, I believe. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. I just want to say greetings. I'm at the baggage carousel in Denver, Colorado at the airport and eventually on my way to Washington, D.C. for advocacy days in a few days. So I want to thank Saul for being on and Dan and Ann and Kendra for pitching in and just to say hello to all our GAMIP and Peace Alliance friends and Georgie, hi, and Mike and Dot. And just thank you all for being such stalwart peace builders over the many years. That's all I wanted to say.
Beautiful. Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for all you do. So as I usually tell our guests at this point, Saul, we very much appreciate you spending this time with us. If you would like to stay on for the remainder of the call, you are more than welcome to do so. But we also understand that your time is precious. If you have to be someplace else or if it's just time for you to call it a day, we understand. We won't take offense.
My time could not be spent in a better way. I'm happy to be with you till the end of the program. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Great to have you with us. Well, that's great, partly because it means when we get to the field share section a little bit later on, and even before that, you may be available to answer other questions that come up about some of the stuff that you've talked about. So now I'm going to pass the mic back to Kendra Mann, who's also on that illustrious Department of Peacebuilding Committee, and Kendra's going to give us an update on the doings of that committee. Welcome back, Kendra.
Okay, and I'm going to do a speed run because I can see that we're running out of time. H.R. 1111, the U.S. Department of Peacebuilding Act, now has 33 co-sponsors and counting, and they are in 18 states and D.C. And this is a bipartisan bill, but they're all Democrats that are co-sponsors. We keep hoping that we'll work that Advocacy Days, like Nancy mentioned, is coming up September 22nd to 25th in D.C. And we also, so you can still register at peacealliance.org and find our Amplify flyer. So what you do is you go to the peacealliance.org and then at the top, then you press on Advocate, and then click on Campaign for Department of Peacebuilding, and you can find more information about our own efforts and about the conference or the Advocacy Days, and about how you can help if you're at home and not able to come by calling members of Congress in advance of our being there, and that really does help create a buzz and interest in our visits then. And then you can also donate to our cause on that, and you're also invited to the third Wednesday calls. Those are calls open to everyone, and that information is also on that page. Thank you.
Terrific, Kendra, thank you. And we will talk more about that Amplify action for the lobby days when we get to talking about the action for the month of September. So folks who haven't already looked at that email that you received from me an hour ago, you have an email with an action sheet link in the email. So if you haven't already, I encourage you to go ahead and click on that link so you can look at the action sheet. And part of the action is to get ready to amplify the voices of the folks who are going to Washington, D.C. for those few days later this month. So thanks for that, Kendra. And we may get back to you with more questions when we get to the action portion. And now I want to hand this over again to Ann Kreeter, who's been a wonderful ally as long as I've been involved in the Peace Alliance, which goes back to 2005. Ann's also been leading the charge at various levels. And Ann's going to tell us some more about the context for this resolution going to the UN about UN infrastructures for peace that's being promoted by peacenow.com. And I believe she's also going to talk about the 20th anniversary of the UN High-Level Forum on Peace. So welcome back, Anne. Great to be with you.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Hello, everybody. Good evening. I'll be quick, too, because I see our time is getting short. So that you all have now clicked on to the other action, the two actions that we're doing this month. The Peace Now Global Resolution is the second action that we are asking for your participation in. So if you click on to www.peacenow.com, you will come to a link where you can actually put your name in to be that saying that you're in support of this resolution. And what it is, I'd like to tell you about how it was developed and where it is now. It's actually an online global resolution that has the support of almost all countries in the world that have people that have participated in the support of this resolution. And I was going to, let's see, there's seven countries that are not yet represented, but the whole idea of this resolution is to get 1 billion signatures for peace all over the world. So we've been working on this for a number of years, and I don't know that we're up to 1 billion yet, but we're getting close, and we're hoping that by next year we might be ready in 2020 to actually bring it to the UN General Assembly to have it be passed, or something along the lines of what is said in the resolution. And if you read it, I just read the highlights. It's the global resolution for the establishment of infrastructures to support the culture of peace. And it says, we, 1 billion plus signatories from 196 nations of Earth, all are in collaboration with the community of nations, want to create infrastructures in their governments and in civil society to develop programs that establish a culture of peace. So if you read, it's a long resolution. It's like 2 pages, and you can read it in the link that was provided. And I just wanted to say 2 more things real quick about it. One is that there are 7 countries that aren't represented, that Dot just gave me this information. Cuba, North Korea, Syria, Kuwait, Qatar, and the Republic of Congo, and San Marino, a small country within Italy. So if anybody knows anyone in any of those countries that you would want to forward this to, it would be really wonderful, because by next year we could actually say that all countries are represented in the resolution. I just wanted to give you a little background about it, because it's actually something that was birthed back when Saul was talking about the summit that was in Victoria in British Columbia. And the World Peace Forum that took place after that was when a group of us got the idea during an exercise when people were saying, what would be the most wonderful thing you could do to advance your cause? And of course, our cause was the Department of Peace. We decided that this would be something that we could work on. And so within a period of from 2006 to 2013, we worked on developing how you actually have a resolution in the UN passed. And so we had input from Ambassador Chowdhury. We brought it back to the different GAMET summits, and the people in the summits had input into it. And then it really took hold at the Geneva summit. And that's when we were introduced to the wonderful creative people from the PeaceNow.com organization that has just taken this whole concept to a different level. So I hope that you sign it and pass it on to other people. So does anybody have any questions about that before I go on to the high-level forum?
If it's okay, Anne, I'd like to just kind of reflect my understanding from what I've been hearing and learning, because it is such a, like, you know, 10 miles up perspective on peace building that I think a lot of us probably aren't used to thinking about such a big landscape. So what I'm understanding is there's been this movement that we've been part of and we've been knowing about here in the United States to create a U.S. Department of Peacebuilding, an organization within our government that would recognize and research and promote the best available conflict resolution peacebuilding tools at every level. And then there are other nations that are promoted by GAMIP that are working to create their infrastructures and ministries and departments of peacebuilding or of peace and justice, or working along similar lines. And what you're talking about now is a resolution going to the United Nations, that is working to get to the United Nations, which will ask the United Nations to say, yes, this is a wonderful idea. We would like all nations of the world to have these infrastructures and ministries of peace building. Kind of the big picture?
That's it. And what's been a challenge from the beginning is that at the United Nations, the whole idea of infrastructures for peace is only a fairly recent concept. So we were really evolving the resolution at the same time that the whole concept was being evolved. So now that it's more well known, we think that it's time. 2020 would be a wonderful time to have the General Assembly pass it.
Wonderful. So it's like a big education project along with building and creating opportunities. I see Saul is waving both hands, so I want to make sure to get him back in the conversation.
Go ahead, Saul. Have the slide. If you put the final slide up, it is a description of this moment of this project.
Okay, I will go to slide number 16, and you can. I guess you can wrap up or go to the next.
See how
fast I can do this.
Okay. While you're doing it, let me just quickly say that this coming Friday the 13th, we are planning to attend the high-level forum on the culture of peace. It's a really big, important year for celebrating because it is the 20th anniversary of the passage of the legislation. It was September 13th, 1999, that Ambassador Chowdhury finally got the Declaration and Program of Action to pass. And basically what I really want to tell you is that we're encouraging people all over the world to come and partake of it through the UN TV. It's webtv.un.org. I believe that you all got the e-blast that was sent out a few days ago that had the information about the high-level forum, and it starts at 10 o'clock. The president of the General Assembly will be having the opening remarks with the Secretary General as well, and then we're very honored to have Lima Gobawi, the Nobel laureate, speak, and that goes on until 11. And then from 11 to 1, the member states all talk about the culture of peace. And then there's a break until 3 o'clock when Jacqueline O'Neill, the woman that Saul was talking about, the Canadian ambassador for women, peace, and security, is going to be one of the panelists. So that's really something exciting. So we hope that people will join us by live stream. And it, of course, it'll be recorded so that you can watch it afterwards as well.
Terrific.
It's the 20th anniversary. So this is the first time that if you saw the e-blast that was sent out, there's a beautiful logo that was created for this special occasion of the 20th year of the passage, and it's got hands on it, and it's symbolic. I can read you. Did you all get that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think most people on the call probably received it, unless people are on the call having gotten the link secondhand.
Okay, so if you look at it again, look closely, and when you see the palms held upwards in the logo, each of the thumbs becomes a beak of a peace dove. Each palm with stylized peace dove image signifies individual commitment, which is the essence of the culture of peace. And then the image of each individual becoming an agent of peace and nonviolence comes out in a simple robustness through raised hands. All the palms put together signify the global movement for the culture of peace, and the colors signify the UN Sustainable Development Goals that are connected to the culture of peace. So when you look at that logo again, just remember that there was a lot of thought put into it by the designers at the UN. Mm-hmm. So that's all I want to say.
Beautiful, Anne. Thank you. I'm sorry to have rushed everybody. I know I put a little bit of the pressure on, but I wanted to get through as much as we could. And with 5 minutes left, I want to bring folks' attention squarely to this action. The screen that Saul had me bring up is the screen that you'll get to if you click on the link in the action sheet. I didn't think it was worthwhile walking somebody through signing the petition because it's so straightforward. I just want to ask folks to, once you're off the call tonight, go ahead to the action sheet, click the first action, which is the link to this petition, and you can go ahead and sign it to voice your, add your voice to the collective, and then you can share the link for other people to sign it. That's pretty straightforward. The second thing that I was planning to ask folks to do, which we're going to abbreviate for time, I'll just tell you about it, is on the second action is the amplify are the voices of folks who are going to DC in about 2 weeks. So as you heard, folks are traveling to Washington, DC for Advocacy Days from September 23rd to September 25th. And the ask for this action is that you go ahead and let your Congress member know that you support the creation of a United States Department of Peacebuilding. And again, within that action sheet, there's a link that will take you directly to a pre-constructed letter to your member of Congress. It's already oriented to go to your district and your senators. It'll take less than a minute. So that's a second action, is to go ahead and click that link and send a message to your members of Congress. And the third is, particularly during those few days, to call the people listed on the second page of that flyer. So it'll become clear if you walk through those couple of links, there's a flyer, and the people on that second page were co-sponsors of the Department of Peacebuilding legislation in 2017, and they have not yet signed on to be co-sponsors of the 2019 version. So this is the strategy created by the Department of Peacebuilding Committee in cooperation with Congresswoman Barbara Lee's office to focus on folks who have been co-sponsors in the past. There are 17, I believe, on that list. So maybe by the end of September, instead of 33 co-sponsors, maybe we'll have 50. If the folks who are going to those congressional offices are being bolstered by phone calls from all over the country from people saying, hey, I want to let you know there's people coming to your office and we stand with them. That's what we mean by amplifying their voice. So we didn't walk through a role play, but it's that straightforward. The phone number is there for you to call the congressional switchboard if you'd rather do that along with sending the email to your own Congress member. And then there's also all the information and background you need, as well as Nancy's email, nancy@peacealliance.org, who's one of the bottom liners of this Advocacy Days and the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. So with 2 minutes left, I want to see if anybody in the field wants to share a bit of news. I promised there would be a chance for some sharing from the field. So anybody out there have a share that they're interested in making? I just noticed a hand up, and I don't know when it went up. So it's area code 707. You'll have your chance right now. If it's still relevant, go ahead. You are unmuted, area code 707.
Oh, is that me, Maggie Corin?
It is, Maggie. Welcome. Hi.
Oh, I was just, I put it out when Anne was talking, and I just wanted to say how fascinating it was that when the idea in 2006 for a resolution, a UN resolution, was conceived at the summit or the Vancouver peace event. Geeta Brooke in New Zealand had the same idea. And I don't know whether Geeta is on this call or not, but anyway, she's with Peace Unity or something or other. But anyway, I also want to say that Anne stuck with this resolution for a long, long time. And she was on a committee, and she was our liaison with the UN from GAMIT. And I can't say enough about Anne and what she did. But also, by the same token, Nancy Merritt has kept the Department of Peace campaign alive too, because it was being ignored for a while. So anyway, we're back on track, and I'm so excited about it. And yes, I am coming to London.
Wonderful. Thank you, Maggie. I was on the phone earlier today with Jay Kendall Johnson. Some of you may remember Jay. He was a district congressional district leader from Dallas, I believe, in 10, 12 years ago. And then he was a state coordinator in Texas before he moved to Denver. And I was talking about in the early days of the Peace Alliance, how I went from being a local volunteer to being a congressional level, district level volunteer to being a state coordinator. And then I was on the board. And part of why I kept getting deeper into it was that every level, the people that were more and more committed to this work were really walking their talk in the way they cooperated. It was very like positive and motivational and accepting. People were working on themselves and working locally. And it was just, it was nourishing and refreshing to be part of those conversations. And some of the folks on this call tonight, part of why I mention it is there are folks on this call that were around during that time and have been around ever since and have really created and nourished that core. People like our board president, Judy Kimmel, and our other board president, Terry Mason, are both on this call and have really kept this flame alive. So I just wanted to speak to that experience and with a lot of gratitude. We're 2 minutes over time, so I'll segue from that into mentioning that if you love what we're doing at the Peace Alliance, if you love this work, you're welcome to support it with some financial contribution if that is something that you're able and joyful about doing. You can go to our website and become a monthly donor or a one-time donor. We welcome financial contributions to help keep the flame burning. And also a quick reminder that this is being recorded, and it's available as a podcast for easy download from our website under the Peace On menu. So I encourage folks to get it, listen, share it, spread the word, and hopefully folks will come together in D.C., powerfully as usual, and be supported by an upsurge of phone calls and emails from around the country. So thanks y'all for your patience and participation. It's really been a pleasure. I'm going to unmute everyone so you can say your final farewells and we can let you go close to on time. And a closing quote is one that was provided by Nancy from Ambassador Chaudhuri, who said, "Let us embrace the culture of peace for the good of humanity, for the sustainability of our planet, and for making our world a better place to live." Again, thanks to all of you, and best wishes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you all.
May peace prevail on Earth.
Indeed.
May peace prevail on Earth.